Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host. And as always, thank you so much for joining in. Today, we have Joe Sanok joining us. He is the founder of The Practice of the Practice. Joe helps counselors create thriving practices that build their businesses by 50 to 500% and, you know, take their income and influence and impact of the world up to the next level. If you're interested in learning how to take a small practice and build it, or a larger practice and get through those growing pains, Joe has developed a coaching counseling practice to help you do just that. Today we jumped on, we heard about some of the things that he would suggest, plus why he decided to spend his time this way. What decision happened in his life that led him down this path? Joe had a very, very difficult time in 2012, facing multiple family emergencies, medical issues, and it got him thinking about his life, the meaning, what mattered to him. Tune in for today's story. Lots of great tips. And if you're interested in learning more about Joe, you can find him at the Practice of the Practice, practiceofthepractice.com. All that information will be on our website as always. Again, thank you so much for listening. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and thank you for joining us. Today we have Joe Sanok joining us. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Hey, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So fun to just, we just met each other. We met through a mutual friend, Jared, who had come on the podcast as well. We were chatting before the show about, you know, there's so many different elements to Joe's life. He's a speaker and he runs a practice. He also helps people build practices. We're thinking about what specifically to focus in on. There's so much great information here. But Joe, before we dive into the podcast and your fields of expertise, before 2012, you had a thriving practice. Things were just humming along, doing what a lot of us do, getting a job, you know, staying busy, earning a living. But you had a really sudden and pretty serious life change in that period of time. Can you take us back to that and share with the audience what happened?
Yeah. So I had kind of your typical counselor story. You get a, you know, undergrad in psychology, go off for your master's degrees, get a job in an agency. And then over time had eventually started working at a community college, which for me was kind of my ideal job. I had lots of flexibility, got to work with clients at a reasonable pace. It wasn't kind of your typical nonprofit world. And as I was working there, I launched my private practice on the side, and that was going really well. And I had launched a blog called Practice of the Practice, where I was just talking about what I was learning, just a co-learner. I'd read a business book and then blog about it for other counselors. And then in 2011, my oldest daughter was born, and we found out that she had some heart issues. And the first surgery was supposed to kind of solve it all, and they had to stop it because they found some complications. And so what for us was supposed to be kind of the end of this book became just a new chapter. And so we got referred to have her have open heart surgery, and this relief, just, you know, we were done. She was healthy. Everything worked how it should. We had stayed at the Ronald McDonald House for a bit. And then 2 weeks later after that, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And it was just like, we're back in this, just this healthcare system.
I mean, and it's not even 2 months or like 2 years,
no.
2 weeks. That's just grueling.
So yeah, like literally we had these 2 weeks of like, oh, we're finally done. And I mean, the year before my mom had had cancer, and we were all just like, okay, we are all as a family finished.
Done.
And then next thing you know, we're down in Texas, and you know, I'm working to kind of work with this person to get my thyroid out and going through all those tests. And while I'm down there, my mom has a heart attack and has to have open heart surgery. And then I know it's just like, it's a bad movie. And then my wife had a miscarriage, and then our best friend had breast cancer. It was just one of those years that,
oh my God,
just like, what is in the water?
Really, dude, that's crazy. Like,
yeah.
I mean, are you just like heads down at some point? I went through a very difficult phase with family health issues, and there's just a point of surrender almost that happens where it's like, okay, I can't have the meta discussions about what's happening in my life because I'll start to lose my mind.
Well, I think we just, I mean, we got into Netflix a lot and just needed that like escape. And I had a friend who, he was a social worker at a hospital, and he said to like all of his clients, he's like, you know, if you just stopped smoking, like now's not the time to like stop smoking, like go back to smoking. You can take care of that later. You just don't need an extra stress. And And not that we picked up all these bad habits, but just to say, like, our main thing right now is survival, make sure our marriage survives, our kids survive, like our family. And we can work on those big, like, I need to exercise more, those type of things later on. And then, so then, like, kind of through that process, I mean, there was, it was a longer treatment. I had to have radioactive iodine treatment. So I had to go off the thyroid pills. And so I was like dead tired for like 3 or 4 weeks. And then, you know, finally everything was all clear. We're all good. And I mean, that's really when the rebuilding happened, because you get in bad habits as a couple and as, you know, a family, where it's like, okay, now we need to undo that survival. We can't keep living on Netflix and wine.
Yeah. No, and for people who don't know out there, your thyroid plays a large role in monitoring your energy levels. So if you are hyperthyroid, you can feel extremely wound up all day long, like 60 cups of coffee. If you're hypothyroid, you can feel extraordinarily tired and gain weight and such. So when he's talking about his energy levels, I mean, that's really serious. My partner had a thyroid of 47 at one point, didn't know. Yeah. The guy's like, I don't know how you're getting out of bed. You should literally be.
Well, like, so they actually removed my entire thyroid. Yeah. And then this next phase was to take out any remaining cells. And so it was like my thyroid levels were like, I had nothing. And that was the point. They didn't want the thyroid to be rejuvenating. And so during that time, the goal was really to have any of those old cells to just be ready to be taken out. And so what I learned during that time, though, was that I really just had to focus in on what really matters in my business, in my life, things like that. Because if I'm going to be working on a blog post or a podcast or, you know, meeting with consulting clients, I had to justify, why am I doing this instead of hanging out with my daughter who's about to have heart surgery, or hanging out with my parents or my wife as I'm about to go get cancer treatment. And so a lot of really good things came out of that in regards to clarifying where to spend my time. But I mean, it's one of those things that you never want to wish on anybody.
Yeah. So those moments, right? Like, we hit rock bottom. We have this clarity. Sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't. It sounds like for you, it really did stick. And as a psychologist, you probably thought about it a lot. What can somebody out there who doesn't want to have to hit a rock bottom take from your experience to figure out what matters today, right? Because that's what I think. So many of us, do we have to hit the proverbial wall to get there, or are there ways to get there?
No, I think there's much easier ways than going through Joe Sanok's 2012. So I remember when I was the first day that I was getting treatment down in Texas, and they were doing a lot of tests at that point. I had gone into the billing office, as they always have you start. And as I'm leaving, this lady says to me, take lots of pictures because you're going to lose your hair. And I wasn't supposed to get treatment where I was going to lose my hair. And so I kind of went into this like mental tailspin. And then I go down to get my blood test done, and it's this really chaotic scene of people like saying, hey, like, you know, come get your blood drawn, and like shouting names. And I'm just like overwhelmed. And I sit down and I'm like, okay, what would I tell my clients if they were super overwhelmed? Well, I tell them, fake it till you make it. I'd say, take some deep breaths, because if your heart rate is above 100, you can't think clearly. And I'd say, find some gratitude. I'm like, okay, let's see if this stupid counseling stuff works for myself. I don't even believe in what I'm like teaching people at that moment.
Right.
And so I take some deep breaths, calm myself down. I look around and I realize, okay, so I have medical insurance that covers me in network across the country. We have some savings. We're not going to have a spaghetti dinner to pay for my medical treatment. And then this guy comes into that area and he's missing a jaw. And this couple walks in and they're both so frail, I can't tell which of them has cancer. And I realize, like, thyroid cancer is one of the most treatable cancers in the world. And I think that so often we have stress in our lives that oftentimes has very simple solutions. And it can be, not that just taking deep breaths solves cancer, but it helped me have clarity. Looking for things that I can appreciate in a really difficult situation allowed me to then say, okay, I have great health insurance. Like, I'm really lucky to have that. And we have some savings, and my cancer isn't as bad as 99% of cancer. So I think that when we're in our businesses and in our lives, taking that time to slow down, to really allow ourselves to sort through the stress of our life, our anxiety, and not just feeling every moment that you're in a waiting room or that you're standing in line somewhere to jump on your phone, but to step back and allow yourself to process through those things, to me, is where innovative thoughts come from, like unique solutions to the world's problems, all these things that help businesses grow, but then also allows us to sort through so much of just our internal dialogue that's often kind of defeating our goals.
Absolutely, because you can't control the fact that you're in this doctor's office and you're about to have a procedure you don't want, plus the other things going on in your life. But you can breathe and you can practice gratitude and those kinds of things. And at least that gives you, you know, control over the emotional states and the feelings that you're having, despite the fact that you have to go through it, right? And I think
absolutely.
To me, isn't that one of the largest issues is that we overly fixate on the thing we can't control, that you are in this doctor's office and it is what it is. And why am I here? Why is this happening? I don't want this. How do I stop this? Instead of just the part that we can control, our perspective of it.
Laura, I think that's a great point, because so often I think we do go into that woe is me, why is this happening to me mindset, which is natural. I mean, when you have that kind of stuff, even if it's smaller versions of that, it's natural to think that. But if you start to say, I'm going to take some ownership of the solution, that doesn't mean that you're a part of the problem. That doesn't mean any of the other things that you might add from your own emotional baggage. But if you can start to say, I can own parts of this solution, and right now all that is taking deep breaths, or yep. I'm going to take some micro steps towards this bigger goal that I have. Mm-hmm. I can't launch this multi-six-figure business right now, but I can start a blog, or I can start setting boundaries around my time so that instead of spending hours on Facebook, I spend the intentional amount that I want to spend on Facebook and then spend time with my kids. Yep. And so we all have these micro decisions that we can make each day to move us towards our goals, to really say, why am I spending time on, you know, fill in the blank, whether it's, you know, Facebook or something else, that's draining time away from my goals and away from my family and friends.
Yeah. And that consciousness and decision to focus on those things instead of the things you just have no influence. So you go through this just unbelievable. I mean, honestly, dude, I like that is a list. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of stories, my own included, but that's out there. And you get to the other side, lots of Netflix, lots of wine, focus on what matters. And you find yourself deciding to change directions, right? Like giving up a lot of the clinical practice. Tell us what the new world looks like.
Yeah. So I think it took a lot of time to kind of clarify, because 2013, you know, my wife, she said to me, I think I need to move in with my parents and we should separate for a bit. It's like, wait, we have just been through it all. And now like our relationship's going to fall apart now. And so we had to first start with some just healing. And so we went through some great work from Dr. John Gottman, who's a wonderful marriage therapist that's been doing research for 40 years, and got some new habits, some new tools, even as a therapist, like, you know, I had a lot to learn, you know? And then after that time of rebuilding and just feeling like, okay, we're stable, we're together, we're healthy, I started to reevaluate why I was working full-time at the college as my practice started to grow, and Practice of the Practice, the website for therapists about marketing and business, that really started to grow. I started to really realize that I could make a shift away from that full-time job. And that was a crazy thought for me, because both my parents worked for the school system. Both of my in-laws worked for the school system. We had always heard, both my wife and I, go to college, get a job, move up in management, you'll make more money that way. Like, entrepreneurship was not at all ever a part of my world, other than my brother, who he was a business consultant, but he was always like the crazy outlier. Like, he's the businessman, and like, we're the ones with stable jobs.
I know. It's always like that, you know, the entrepreneur, the artist, the creative, like all those types, you know, the writer, it's somehow the crazy thing to do. But then when people do it, we're very, you know, we admire them. Like, we have museums with their work, and we go to the theater and we watch movies, right? So it's funny we don't support them along the way more.
Right. Well, it was such a mind shift for me, where I had to really look at some of just the basics, that every year that I was working at that community college, I was losing money because our health insurance costs were going up at a rate that was less than how much we were getting as raises, or more than we were getting as raises. And as I started to kind of look at, you know, I tend to be pretty analytical about thinking, but then I also have this artistic side as well. And so I really had to feel that it wasn't going to be a risk for my family, because we had another baby coming at the time and my wife was a stay-at-home mom. And so if I'm the only breadwinner and we have all these heart issues, like, odds are that the second kid was going to have heart issues, which she did. But I had to then look at, how do I then transition out of this? And so I actually used the full Family Medical Leave Act to drop down to 20 hours a week for 6 months. And then that basically covered our health insurance costs. And right away, I saw that the income, you know, what I was doing in 10 hours, now I could do in 20, it went up. And then I was able to kind of justify to myself that leaving this full-time job was a smart step, but also it opened up a number of opportunities. So then when I left about 2 years ago, it was like I was able to really designed the life that I wanted at that point.
And what is that life? What is your sort of ideal day now? What does that look like?
Yeah. So right now where I'm at, I take Mondays and Fridays off. I only work Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But that as well was a process because I didn't want it to impact the bottom line of what our family could do and kind of what I was able to do in regards to impact on the world. So in the summer of 2015, I started taking Fridays off just as an experiment for the summer. And that's a word you'll hear me say a lot is an experiment. Like I'll try it, see if it works. And if it doesn't, we can always go back to it. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a lifelong decision. So it worked great. The income kept going up and I had to optimize my time more, challenged me to raise my rates as well, which most people, whether they're doing coaching or counseling or any sort of business, often undervalue themselves. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer of 2016, I did another experiment to see if I could take Mondays off. And again, that worked. And throughout that time, I had to really evaluate how do I continue to scale? So bringing on assistants, virtual assistants, automating as much as I can, while still getting the same kind of impact on the world that I was seeking to have through my business.
And the business itself, the practice of the practice, what is that? Tell the audience what, I mean, I know what it is, but share a little bit?
So basically, I mean, the quick version is that I help small businesses get bigger. But if you drill into it, it's really about helping people that have private practices. So counseling practices, attorneys, massage therapists to start, grow, and scale a private practice. A lot of times we hear kind of startup websites, but there's definitely three very clear phases that private practices go through. That startup phase is usually under $50,000 gross per year. And so it may start as a side gig, you start doing a massage therapy business or private practice as a counselor or attorney. And then you start to grow. And that's where you really start to get your ideal client in there. You're filling up your ideal practice. And when you pass that $100,000 mark, that's really where scaling has to kind of be the next thing that we teach. And I think that's where most people struggle because what gets people to $100,000 a year is usually a lot of hustle, a lot of grit, working a ton of hours, doing as much as they can to keep their costs low. But that's almost the exact opposite of what you need to do when you start to scale, where you need to be asking yourself, why am I spending time doing this when I could pay someone a much lower rate to do this, to optimize my time? Yeah. So really, that's what practice of the practice is. And there's, you know, we have a podcast and we have articles and lots of tools to help people do that. But it's all about starting, growing, and scaling private practices.
Well, I will say, having grown a business, you know, from zero to several million, the worst, most difficult phase was that phase. I always tell entrepreneurs, if you can get from 10 employees to 15, you can get to 50, because letting go of everything, creating systems around you, figuring out what you're great at and what you're not great at and what you need to delegate and how to delegate and get the systems to work for you, it is just a monster to get that done. But when you get to the other side, it all runs itself, right? It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's brutal because oftentimes everything is up in that person's head usually.
Yes. You know, totally. I was that person.
Like, you just know how to do it. Why would I write this down and turn it into a process? I can just do it great and nobody can do it like me, which is often true at first. But if you train someone, oftentimes they can do it better than you and they can grow it into something that you couldn't have grown. And really, should you be spending your time on that too? And so allowing yourself to step back, let other people try, fail, give them feedback, and then keep iterating as you go, that's going to save you so much time in the long run to do those big picture things that you need to be spending your time thinking about, not the kind of piddly smaller stuff that needs to get done.
Absolutely. And do you start with helping people understand what it is? I mean, I guess for you, because you're working with counselors and practitioners, then they know exactly what their core competency is. With entrepreneurs, like as an entrepreneur, you're the accountant, you're the like, right? Like you do everything. So learning like, what do I actually do best is a little bit of a process.
Well, I think oftentimes the people drawn to private practice are the people that maybe don't fit your typical clinical mold. And so they do like sometimes doing accounting. They do like the marketing. They do like the design aspects of things. And so pulling them away, because they already feel like an outlier within the counseling field. Like, I'm just not clinical. I do other things too.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, helping them understand how valuable their time to think about the big projects is where we'd start with someone that's over that six figures. Really, when you're under that, I'm working with people on really basic kind of startup things, giving them tools that are lower cost or free to get them to that growth or that scaling phase.
If somebody's out there and they've gotten themselves going a little bit, but they're just unable to, I don't know, push past the $40,000, right? Like they're just sort of in that in-between annoying phase. What's a tip or two that you have to help them, you know, pop to the next level?
Yeah, I think there's a number of really practical tips. So getting more national recognition is really important for building how much you can charge, as well as getting those connections. So something like Help a Reporter Out, Haro, if you just, I think it's helpareporter.com. There's businesses and news outlets all over that three times a day are saying, hey, we need sources for this information. And so to get featured in, you know, Reader's Digest, Forbes, all these big magazines, oftentimes you can be responding to those. So I think that gives you some national recognition that also then builds your credibility, your expertise. You're learning a lot of really great things through that. Second, I would say really focusing in on, are you attracting who you want to attract to your practice or to your business? So often it starts with, we just want business in our private practice. We're just thankful people are picking up the phone.
Yeah.
And then long-term sustainability, you have to ask yourself, are there certain clients or customers that are burning me out? And are those the kind of clients or customers that I want to have coming to my business? And so really identifying your ideal client, focusing in on who you attract, who do they vent to? Who are they when they're frustrated? What are they frustrated about? And who do they vent to? And then connecting with those sources, I think, is what helps people get to that past $50,000 level. And then the third thing I'd say is really then looking at your analytics. And so if you have an email list, for example, how are people getting onto that email list? What are they doing once they're on the email list? How are they making buying decisions? I think most people, when they're at that $50,000, haven't spent the time to look at those analytics. And changing just one of those things to be more optimized can change your bottom line. If you know you get 100 people a month onto your email list, you know that, you know, 1% of those people buy. If you can look at every factor along that and have the double their open rate, double the amount of people opting in, double the amount of people that buy, even just changing one of those elements to change the bottom line can double your business at the end. And so looking at that and having that information from, you know, Google Analytics, from whatever website provider you have, from your email list, that would be where I'd spend a lot of time with someone that's at that 40 grand a year mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I think those are great tips for anybody listening. And this podcast is obviously about having an authentic life. So having gone through such a huge change, finding the career that you love, practice of the practice, you're helping people, you've scheduled a life that now is completely organized around your, you know, dream way of living. What does an authentic life mean to you?
Yeah, for me, an authentic life starts with, what do I not just enjoy doing, but also how does it impact the world? And so, for example, most weekends, we have these friends, Paul and Diane, who we met a couple years ago, and we reach out to them almost every weekend to have them over for dinner, to play some board games, to just connect and talk about deeper issues beyond just, you know, work or business. And so talking about theological things, pushing ourselves to think differently, exploring topics that maybe we wouldn't explore to have that depth. So for me, an authentic life is a lot of times having those deeper relationships with people that challenge you to think differently than maybe you've been raised, or even where you've decided to land as an adult, is where I find the most authenticity.
And what do you do on a daily basis? Do you have any rituals, habits, practices that help you in making those decisions and building a life that's, you know, reflective of what you want?
Yeah, I would say it's more on a weekly basis because, you know, with 4-day weekends, that's going to look different than the 3 days that I work. But throughout the week, I'm almost always the drop-off person for my 5-year-old for kindergarten. And so, you know, we go to her school, climb up this big flight of stairs that's outside. She goes to a school that's in these old cabins. They don't have hallways or anything. It's just like in the woods. And so we walk through the woods to her classroom and do hugs and, you know, really making sure that I'm fully present for my kids when I'm there, and setting boundaries around that's really important for me. When it's a work day, the night before, will have looked at what I need to accomplish the next day to be most successful and get the most done and make sure that I have what I need for that next day. And then on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, really try to sprint full tilt. For me, I try to have very few breaks so that I can be sprinting full tilt, and then at the end of the day, be able to turn off as much as I can.
Yeah.
So then in the evenings, oftentimes it's, you know, putting my phone on the counter, sometimes even putting it in airplane mode if I feel like I'm really like going to be drawn to it. And then on Fridays, what we do, my wife and I, oftentimes I'll take our youngest, and then she goes and does whatever she wants to do to kind of regroup as a stay-at-home mom. And that could be, you know, lunch with a friend or something. And on the weekends, we have sort of like a no business policy. Like, I don't check my emails. I don't check my phone. So really, I think I would summarize it that having very clear boundaries for me is really important, because that then allows me to have my brain be on other things. I'll read other books that aren't really business books and are more just for fun to read that I'll have going, or to go on websites, or even just, you know, play board games with the kids. It allows my brain to appreciate things other than just business progress.
Yeah, you know what, dude, I'm right there with you. I'm all about boundaries. I work my tail off and then I'm like done. And people can't believe it because I've, you know, I built a big business and everything, but I did it even back then. I you know, I have this rule. I haven't brought my cell phone upstairs in my house in 20 years. It's just that stuff becomes toxic if you're not careful, and erodes everything else. And you just, you know, you're sort of like diddling with these things, but you're not getting anything done. So I just prefer like to sprint and be done. But I think it's about finding what works for you. So Joe, if people are interested in learning more, they've got a, you know, six-figure business, they want to bring that up, they have they're sort of in that entry level, they want help counseling, where can they find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me is over at practiceofthepractice.com. If you're interested in talking about consulting or other things, it's just /consulting. I also have a free webinar for people that's at practiceofthepractice.com/ideal client. So anyone that needs to help clarify their who they're trying to attract to their business would get a lot of value out of that webinar. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Hey, before you go, I have a quick question for you. Have you ever considered coaching? If you have no idea what coaching is, no worries. It's basically like a personalized workout program, but instead of doing 100 squats and a million sit-ups, you're working out your mind, your well-being, and your emotions. Coaching is about setting goals and taking action to create a life that's meaningful to you. As we navigate through life and ask ourselves the tough questions, what do I want? What makes me happy? How do I build a life that works for me? Just like we talk about on the podcast, how do I have success, but have success that's authentic and meaningful? In part, the tactics play a huge role. Setting goals, having priorities that make sense, and making sure you're organized with your lists. After running a company for 15 years, I help my clients with that all the time. But coaching takes it even further. We remove all that stuff, all those mental obstacles that get in your way when you're trying to make those tough life choices. If that sounds interesting to you, come on over to lauraco.com, click on the contact form and send me a note, or at the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a button where you can click and set up a call with me. Just like that, it's free. We'll chat, we'll find out what's going on and see if it makes sense for me to help you out. No strings attached. I hope to hear from you. And again, thank you so much for tuning in. I really value each and every one of you.